When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Maeve McClenaghan, and this is The Tip-Off, the podcast where we take you behind the scenes of some of the UK's best investigative journalism. When you start an investigation, you don't always know where it's going to lead. Some end in failure. This is one of those stories. Well, at least it starts that way.
My name is Billy Kenber, and I'm an investigations reporter at The Times.
This is a story about pharmaceuticals. It's not an area that Billy was particularly interested in.
No, not at all. I have never done anything on it before. I don't have any sort of background in science, and it was never particularly my thing.
As an investigations reporter, Billy was used to turning his hand to a lot of things. In the past, he'd dug into students cheating at university exams, or charity bosses pocketing huge sums. But at the start of last year, he had begun thinking about the pharmaceutical industry, and one potential money-making scheme had caught his eye.
There's something called pay for delay, which is a phenomenon that's been seen a little bit in the UK, but largely in the US, and it's essentially where a drug company has invented a big new blockbuster drug. The patent is about to come to an end, and they pay off rival companies for, say, a period of a year or two years to not bring in a competing product, so that they still have a monopoly.
It's the kind of thing that happens a lot in the United States of America. So could this be happening over here, Billy thought.
I started trying to look for court cases or anything along those lines. There's basically been one big case in the UK, and it dates back about 15 years at this stage, but it was only fairly recently wrapped up. So I was essentially speaking to people and trying to dig documents that would see if there were other similar cases, even maybe at an earlier stage, or and going through things like there are various databases which try and collect when patents are due to run out and which drugs are particular blockbusters that might be ripe for this sort of behaviour.
He looked and he looked, but actually there wasn't much there. It could have been game over then. A journalistic hunch that just didn't play out in reality. But there was one thing that Billy came across that had caught his attention.
As part of the kind of preliminary research for the pay for delay stuff, I was just trying to get hold of whatever documents were put out there on drugs and prices and patents. And one of these is a thing called the drug tariff, which the NHS puts out once a month, and it lists... It's a complicated document, but it essentially lists prices that the current price that the NHS is paying for drugs. And a few months earlier, there had been a big scandal in the US, which you may remember.
Popping a pill before bed that costs about $13.50. Now imagine waking up the next morning to find that the price of the exact same pill jumped to $750 overnight. That is just what happened to one drug.
At the center of this scandal in the US was a man called Martin Shkreli. You might have heard of him. He was the guy who bought up the rights to a HIV drug and then hiked up the price.
And we also feel that this is the more appropriate price for Daraprim. At this price, Daraprim is still actually on the low end of what orphan drugs cost, and we're certainly not the first company to raise drug prices.
It was a move that really outraged the US. But to all intents and purposes, Shkreli was playing within the limits, the rules of this system. So now Billy had this pricing database from the NHS. And he wondered if anything similar could be happening over here.
So I had an inkling that if there were big price rises, it would be interesting to see. The key question was, who's behind them? And is it the same people again and again? And essentially, is there someone who's in the UK who's doing what this guy is happy to do in the US, and he's kind of braggy about it and doesn't mind being the kind of figure of hate? Are there equivalent companies in the UK who are just quietly making a killing? And so when I got hold of the drug tariff and started looking through it, I did kind of quick back-of-the-envelope calculations of the kind of increases there had been, I think, initially over a three-year period. And immediately it was obvious there were quite a lot of very big percentage increases of like 1,000, 2,000, 5,000%.
So forgetting the pay delay idea, Billy turned all his attention to the pricing data. He pulled it all into a spreadsheet and did some simple calculations, looking at percentage rises over time.
Yeah, I created a big Excel document. I'm sure people that are better at that sort of thing could have done it much more rapidly and neatly, but I nevertheless managed to do it, where it was comparing whether there'd been a change in category and giving prices and I think an annual basis and then a percentage increase and that sort of thing. And that allowed me to focus in, I think, initially on about 20 or 30 drugs.
Pretty soon he had a list of questions that he wanted answered.
Who was making these drugs, who was supplying these drugs, and therefore who's responsible for these increases, how much does that cost in the NHS, how widely prescribed are they, what other factors might there be in what in these increases? Was it justifiable, essentially? Was there some big manufacturing cost, some difficult manufacturing process that had changed that justified it? Was there some problem with the active ingredient that similarly caused issues? Or was this, as it kind of initially appeared to be, just from the percentages and from the numbers of drugs involved, but essentially profiteering companies that are just putting the price up because they know they can get away with it and they know it will bring in a lot of money?
Billy started to pull in as much information as he could.
The regulator publishes a list of people that have been granted licences each month, and that I managed to get the historic data for that. I can't remember whether I had to FOI it or whether I just asked. And then there was also a database I got hold of, which was the transfers of licences when they were sold between companies. Through these various databases, it was able to start to see the companies behind these drugs.
In amongst the names of all those drugs, in hundreds of rows on the spreadsheet, there were a few drugs that seemed particularly interesting.
So one of the, I think the example with the biggest percentage increase was a drug called hydrocortisone, which is it's a steroid. It's a treatment for thyroid problems, often things like Addison's disease. And that had gone up from, I think, 70p to £88 for one dosage, which is I believe, 12,500% increase.
Now that could have been a story in its own right, but Billy wanted to look deeper to see if there was something more systematic going on.
I was more shocked and more surprised and more interested in the fact that there was a pattern behind this and a group of companies behind this than kind of the individual price rises, because I knew from the beginning that there was no point in doing a story about an individual price rise. There is a point in doing it, but that wasn't what the purpose of the investigation was. It was the focus was always on the pattern and who's behind it and who is profiting from this.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So when we left off, Billy had stumbled onto something interesting. Figures in a database that seemed to suggest some common drugs were being sold at huge markups. But he wanted to go deeper. Who was behind all of this? Bit by bit, he started to put the pieces together. And a pattern started to emerge.
It was only one or two companies with a license, and they were the same companies. But it was clearly a group of companies, and the numbers of drugs involved, it seemed to be more than just, let's see what we can do with this one drug. It seemed to be a business model almost. But there was one company that set itself up seemingly purely to do this. I think it had four or five drugs at this point, and they literally just doubled the price of those drugs every 6 months.
Suddenly, it looked like he was really onto something. This data seemed to suggest that a handful of companies were cashing in.
That's quite an exciting moment. That's where you realise this is a kind of bigger story and a bigger scandal than just individual, this is an outrageous price of this specific medicine. But this was when it clicked that this wasn't just coincidence. This was a specific, deliberate method of business by a group of companies.
Now, normally at this stage, you might go to an expert, run your methodology by them to confirm if what you're seeing looks right. But that wasn't so easy this time.
I spoke to a few academics and they didn't really have an answer. Maybe I just didn't find the right academics. But no one at that point seemed to really have a clear understanding of how the drug tariff worked.
So he was kind of on his own. And this was a complicated world. Regulators and rules that he hadn't come across before. So it took a while just to get his head round the system. Say, for example, how the prices of drugs were even worked out in the first place.
Kind of a mechanism of working out the price for category A, which there's two named big wholesalers and two big manufacturers, and they basically average those out. But if there's only one manufacturer behind the whole thing, it doesn't matter.
And getting all those details right was important.
Not least because I knew and it proved to be the case that when it came time to start talking to these companies and giving them a chance to respond, their immediate response was, you don't understand how this works, it's very complicated, and we're not culpable, we're not the ones responsible for the price. The NHS sets the price and they approve the price and they're happy with it, so what's the problem? So there was a long process of just understanding how the system worked.
But once he had his head around all that, Billy stepped back and looked at what he had.
Started to get hold of the information on prescription costs and that sort of thing, which shows you exactly how much the NHS has spent on these drugs. And they were literally going from costing $500,000 a year to costing $40 or $50 million a year. And across the whole lot, it was getting close to $500 million.
Once he had all that clear, it was time to start looking into just who was behind these companies.
But once you have a company name, there's a registry of companies in the UK, which is now, I think, freely available on the internet, called Companies House. And it's quite a straightforward, although sometimes time-consuming process, in that each company has to disclose the shareholders, their details, some accounts, depending on the size of the company, related parties, and it's just a question of tracking through who are the key shareholders across the businesses, following the profits through, what sort of turnover are these guys doing, what sort of profits are they making, and then building up a kind of wider picture of who these people are. So where do they live? What have they done in the press before?
Behind one of the companies were two brothers from Essex, Biku and Vijay Patel. Billy found out that the millionaire brothers lived in grand mansions. And a quick cutting search revealed various stories praising their success as rag-to-riches heroes.
And there was a nice, there was a kind of easy contrast to be made. But the guys behind these companies, particularly the company that we featured most prominently on the first day, they clearly cared about their reputation. They did some philanthropy that they were keen people to be aware of. They held various honorary degrees from places. They did talks. They won awards for entrepreneurship or similar kind of commercial awards. And it just seemed quite, you know, a shocking contrast that they're being held up as these examples of great businessmen and great role models, and actually this is what they're actually up to.
Billy found that the Patel brothers owned Atnas, a company that specialised in buying the rights to older medications that are still used by patients but are no longer of interest to major pharmaceutical companies. They bought up the rights to produce Sinopin, an antidepressant drug. In the course of just a few years, the price of a packet of that antidepressant rose from £3.77 to £97. That spike in price meant that the drug cost the NHS £5.1 million last year, up from £400,000 in 2013. At first, the Patels declined to comment, but later their company issued a statement saying that it acquires the rights to make medicines from large pharmaceutical companies at significant upfront costs. It said that it then spends significant money on ensuring that the medicines are in line with the latest regulatory, medical and technical standards. It wasn't just the Patels. Billy found another businessman linked in all that data.
But there was a guy called Anil Sharma.
Sharma had a company that Billy kept finding in his databases. It seemed that soon after this guy's company sold a patent on, the price of the drug would jump up. And this seemed to be making Sharma huge profits.
He made about 100 million, I calculated, from the sale of these licenses effectively, but he sold the companies each time and therefore it was trackable through Companies House accounts.
But who was this guy? Billy did some digging around online, and he soon found an Instagram account belonging to Sharma's son. He pulled up the photos. They told their own story.
You know, luxury cars outside the front of their house, and father and son in a nightclub with a magnum of vodka and all sorts of other shenanigans, which just help illustrate a story, basically. They some of this stuff is very technical, and transfer of licenses is quite technical, and I think it's a more readable story if you can liven it up with details like that.
In a statement issued to Billy via his lawyer, Anil Sharma said that the price rises were beyond his control and that the licenses were sold at valuations that reflected the price of the medicine at that time without any regard to potential price increases which a buyer might impose. With all that information, rows of data in huge databases, complicated pricing rules, and a wealth of colourful details about the men involved, Billy had to work out how to write it all up.
Yeah, I mean, I think inevitably when you spend several months researching a story and you end up with a Google document that, I don't know how many pages it was, but dozens certainly, and all these drugs and all these companies and all the evidence behind it, you end up with an article or a series of articles that even then only represent a kind of a fraction of what you've discovered, hopefully the most important elements, but certainly not everything. There's a lot you have to leave out, and there's a lot you kind of try and pack in.
And every word is important, not just for the storytelling. With a story this complex and legally fraught, the lawyers at the Times had to carefully pick over all of Billy's copy.
you have to be very sure of yourself, and you have to be very sure you're not overstepping yourself at any point, and that every little bit that you mention, every drug you mention, is that definitely the case in that one, that there were these prices changed at this time, or whatever detail it is. Yeah, there's an immense amount of picking over that.
But finally, it was ready to go. Time to publish.
We put it on the front page 2 days in a row, which was, I think, an important part of provoking that response. And they got in touch with lots of tips or areas that I hadn't explored yet.
Billy had revealed a side industry costing the NHS hundreds of millions of pounds a year, with some drug prices being hiked up by more than 12,500%. And he'd found examples where people had been taken off life-changing drugs, which were working, because the prices had skyrocketed and the medicines were no longer considered affordable. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the public reaction to the stories was shock and anger.
I mean, I had over 100 emails within 48 hours or so of the story, lots of people ringing in and lots of people saying, look at this drug, you haven't mentioned this one, or the other side of it, why isn't the NHS doing anything about this? And you know, people getting in touch saying, I tried to blow the whistle on this drug 2 years ago, or I tried to blow it on this one 3 years ago, whatever it was. So it was very quickly apparent there was just masses more, and that it had kind of really touched a nerve. I mean, I think the NHS is always a sensitive subject, you know, a hot button topic, and at the time of austerity and strained budgets and all the rest of it, I think this kind of very egregious, just totally unjustified profiteering just looked as such to people and was such a start. I mean, it's almost kind of, there's no, it's like movie villainry, there's no subtlety to some of the stuff. So I think that kind of touched home in a way.
Sometimes you can publish a story, people get up in arms, but then the whole thing blows over quite quickly and nothing really changes. And that can be hugely frustrating. But that didn't happen this time. You see, one day, Billy got a phone call. On the other end of the line was a government press officer.
The Department of Health frankly often said, you might be interested in this, we're announcing this law we're going to try and pass. That's obviously very nice. You kind of do this kind of journalism because you want to have an impact, and you want to be a kind of force for positive change. A law is a very specific and kind of measurable outcome, and you don't necessarily need that for a story to be a success, but it's definitely pleasing.
Seeing a new law passed in reaction to your work is something most journalists can only imagine. But for Billy, there was something that was even better.
The kind of most gratifying part of doing this story was getting the messages from patients on a particular drug who were doctors are trying to take them off it because it's become too expensive, saying, thank you for explaining what's happening. And we were so confused as to why this drug that's been around for so long has just suddenly become so expensive and it's having such significant consequences for us in our daily lives. And now we know the answer, and now we can use that to, you know, try and pressure for that to stop happening. That's the most gratifying thing, I think.
So there you go. The story of how one journalist set off on the path to investigate one thing and ended up with a completely different story. It's been well over a year since that first story ran, and Billy's been working on other things, but he's also continued to report on this issue.
That first story ran 15 months ago, and I'm still going essentially on the same investigation. It's just turned out to be an extremely ripe area for investigation.
How many stories did you have a kind of running tally on?
On this topic? There is a tally, and I can't remember what it is. I mean, definitely over 20.
Thanks to Billy Kemper. There's links to his stories in the show notes. And thanks to all of you for listening. We're putting out episodes fortnightly now, and it's been just amazing to see the lovely reviews on iTunes and tweets or Facebook comments about the show. You can find us on social media at Tip Off Podcast. They really keep me going, so thank you very much. That's all for this episode. Our theme tune, as always, is by Dice Muse, and other music in this episode is by Poddington Bear. next time on The Tip-Off.
We started talking about music, and then it kind of hit us in the sense that, well, why don't we see if we can use sound as a reporting tool?
How do you take a spreadsheet and put it to music? The team behind Climate Symphony explore a whole new way of telling investigative stories.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big.